parted by death, in fear of God, one in the Holy Trinity and all the saints.
I'd looked to my wedding to Tomas as a beacon, the same way a sailor on rough seas might fix his gaze upon a lighthouse at the distant shore. Our love had been my reason to live, and to carry on and to fight for so many years. But our wedding day was supposed to be a brief reprieve from all of the hardship and suffering. The reality of that day was so very different, and my disappointment in those moments seemed bigger than the world itself. We were supposed to marry in the regal church in our hometown, not there, standing just beyond the tent city of the Buzuluk refugee and military camp, just far enough from the tents that the squalid stench of 80,000 desperate souls was slightly less thick in the air. That reprieve from the crowds and the smell came at a cost. We were outside, sheltered only by the branches of a sparse fir tree. It was an unseasonably cold day for fall, and every now and again, fat snowflakes would fall from the heavy gray skies to melt into our hair or our clothing, or to make still more mud in the ground around our feet. I'd known my friends in the assembled crowd of well-wishers for only a few weeks. Every other person who'd once been important to me was in a concentration camp, or dead, or just plain lost. My groom awkwardly declined to take communion, a gesture which bewildered that poor, kindly priest, but didn't surprise me one bit. Even as the bride, I wore the only set of clothes I owned, and by then, once simple routines like bathing had become luxuries long forgotten. The lice infestation that had overrun the entire camp had not spared me, nor my groom, nor the priest, nor even a single individual in the small crowd of well-wishers. Our entire assembly shifted and twitched constantly, desperate to soothe that endless itch. I was dull with shock, which was almost a blessing, because it was probably all that saved me from weeping my way through the ceremony. Mrs. Konchau was yet another new friend to me, but she was fast becoming a dear one. She was in charge of the orphans, and I'd been working alongside her on compulsory work duties since my arrival at the camp. When the ceremony was done, she'd ushered a group of children out from the small crowd of onlookers, and she flashed me a radiant smile. Then she raised her arms to conduct, and together, she and the makeshift choir began to sing Serdechna Matko, a hymn to the beloved mother. Those orphans were filthy and skinny and alone, just as I was. But they weren't sad at all in that moment. Instead, their hopeful gazes were focused on me, and they were eager to see me pleased. I wanted nothing more than to wallow in the awfulness of my situation, but the hope in those innocent eyes took priority over my self-pity. I forced myself to share with them all a bright, proud smile, and then I made myself a promise. There would be no more tears from me that day. If those orphans could be generous and brave in the face of their situation, then so could I. After that, I focused only on the music and the sound of Mrs. Konchau's magnificent voice as it rose high above and around us in a soaring solo. Her tone was sweet and true, and she scaled the melody like it was a game, bringing me something close to joy in a moment that should have been joyful, offering me peace in a moment that should have been peaceful, and dragging me back once more to a faith I kept wishing I could lose. And as that song wound on, I closed my eyes and I forced down my fear and my doubt until I could once again trust that the broken pieces of my life would fall into place one day. War had taken almost everything from me, but I refused to let it shake my confidence in the man I loved.
Chapter 1. Alice. I'm having a very bad day, but however bad I feel right now, I know my son is feeling worse. We were at the grocery store a few blocks away from our house in Winter Park, Florida. Eddie is on the floor, his legs